You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Yeah, usually on these interviews, we like to talk about the current stuff going on with guys.
We had a player by the name of David Beckham. I don't know who would call that.
Yeah. Is there a name for this thing? Is there something like if I was to go to the barber and say I want X, that he would know exactly what I was asking for?
Yeah, tell him you want the Bobby Shuttleworth.
In desperation mode, not really muster the kind of energy and the kind of desperate attacks that I think you would have seen out of a team at home desperately needing a goal. And I say desperate 3-4 times because you have to be desperate.
He's hinging his MLS Cup hopes on you, Simon.
Deep down, if you're a soccer person, you are a little bit embarrassed by it.
Now, Simon Bork is going to disagree because yeah. I remember a time about a month ago when he told me that he'd rather have Lamar Nagel on his team than Landon Donovan.
I think that's a bunch of garbage.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you're listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC Channel 94 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, as always, on this snowy Monday in New York City, Simon Bork, David Goss. How's it going, boys? I mean, Snowmageddon. Winter Storm Juno is coming. We may get kicked out of this office here on this Monday. We're just trying to get a product out.
As we look out here, it doesn't look that bad.
Yeah, no, it's not intimidating.
It was a lot worse in Queens this morning.
It was a lot worse walking
here. Of course, it's always worse in Queens. In Queens, we have to walk uphill both ways to the subway.
It's the higher elevation.
You know. How are you preparing for this, Simon, by the way? Because I like to ask you, you know, the intricacies of life. I always feel like so I'm better coming from you.
You know, I went to make a grocery run late on Sunday night, so I feel like we're equipped. But then
I get in, definitely
the strawberry jam.
Okay,
but I walk in and my doorman who used to be in the military says, you know, we make a joke about how all this, you know, Snowmageddon stuff, mm-hmm. and then he goes, no reason to get prepared if you're always prepared. And I'm like, you're always prepared. So apparently he was in the military and he went on to list all the things that he has at home. Butane containers, yes. 40 gallons of and this is, I'm assuming he's in an apartment, is what he talked about.
So half the apartment is always
there. He has night vision goggles. He mentioned, I don't know how many bottles of water.
The butane stash. If I lived with him, I'd be like, yo, don't be stocking up on butane in your closet back here. We don't know what could happen.
So I feel very underprepared compared to other people.
Your provisions not up to snuff. I've got some food. I've got some things. We'll see how it goes. Supposed to be between 2 and 3 feet here in New York City, which would be historic. We'll see what happens. Hopefully we'll be around on
Thursday.
What's
the must-have item that Wiebe goes to the store to make sure he has on the snow day?
Am I supposed to say, or are you guessing here?
I mean, you're a type who would somehow find a way to roast marshmallows in your house.
Mine's baked beans. Gotta have a couple of cans of baked beans.
Really?
Why?
Because that's your go-to food when everything gets bad. You light a little fire, you heat the can up, like over a little fire, and then that's your dinner.
I made a bunch of quinoa and like roasted vegetables last night.
There you go.
Hold on. You heat up the beans directly in the can?
Yeah, if you need to in a bad situation.
What's the bad situation? Yeah, yeah. Like what's going to happen?
There's no fire. There's no gas. There's no electricity.
Yeah, so then, okay. So then you're just like making little fires in your apartment?
Well, that's what you do when you go camping.
Okay. Well, if you can pull that off in your New York City apartment, I want to see it. Big show for you here on this Monday. We're going to talk a bunch of DP signings, a bunch of movement in MLS, and then we're going to talk to Sean Maloney. Newly minted of the Chicago Fire, introduced to the media on Monday. We'll get him on the phone here in just a little bit. Second segment, all U.S. men's national team. The U-20s got it done. Jurgen Klinsmann came out and said that they would. He said they'd be in New Zealand. We doubted him a little bit. That was a rough start for Tab Ramos and the boys, but they beat Trinidad and Tobago, and they go. They're going to the World Cup. Yeah, thank you once again, Trinidad and Tobago. I'll just keep repeating that to reinforce it. Then we'll talk about the game in Chile on Wednesday. The big boys, they're going to have their first friendly of 2015. How will they play? What formation will they play? A lot to talk about with Jurgen Klinsmann's guys down in Chile. And then the mailbag, of course, a lot of good stuff in there from all the listeners. So let's jump right into it, guys. Let's start with Tim Cahill. Rumors now that he will head to UAE, that there's a club there interested in bringing him in after the Asian Cup. Of course, Cahill and Australia in a semifinal against the UAE in that same Asian Cup. Was that this morning, Simon? Because I know Justin Miram in Iraq played South Korea this morning. They lost 2-0.
That's now it's the overnight of Monday and Tuesday.
Okay, so we're waiting to see what happens with that one. But is that – I mentioned it to Dave right when we came in here, and he said, oh, that's a good move for the Red Bulls. First thought, not even any hesitation. Explain yourself.
I just think that it's an opportunity to – I think he's a great personality. I think he's a great part of the club. But they are moving on from last year's team because Henri left, that they're changing the team over a little. Now it gives you a little bit of an opening, a way to change. You're not as locked down. He's very –
Hold on. You were one of the Cahill defenders. No, I was – hold on. I was the guy during the year who said Cahill is not effective.
Classic.
Cahill is not effective as he was in the past, and that – he's useless to the team.
What
he should
you
be
said
on the bench.
Was he has never been effective is what you said. But
that is what
now,
you said.
No, I recognize that he scored some goals, some key goals, but he hasn't been an impact player.
Now,
and I was upset the fact that he was getting a pass, I believe, from the fans who were all in love with him. Now where are the fans? Look, where's the outcry?
Wait.
David?
I don't know that they were all in love with him. Let's bring it down a notch here. I don't know that they were always in love with him. I think there was always some element of beef with Tim Cahill, especially as it relates to his slow start in MLS. A lot of people wondering if he ever would contribute. And then, of course, the Australia stuff over and over and over.
You didn't feel they gave him a pass?
No.
Because he was the good guy? He always said the right things?
I think he got a little bit of a pass. I think he definitely, because of his personality.
Did he not deserve one for a 10-goal season in which you won the Supporters' Shield and was one of your most valuable players?
Well, that's –
I'm sorry.
That could be the debate, but that still means he gets the pass. But
either
way,
I
think they're better off going forward without him right now.
Yeah.
Hold on. Why? Why the change of mind?
Because I think right now they have an opportunity to get a blank slate and try and
build
a team.
But if he's the great player that you think he is, he's useful.
Okay.
No?
Okay.
But anyway, it fits his goal of being closer to the national team,
sure,
by being in the UAE, I guess.
Brett Holman, also a member. He's also an Australian player international there. He's also a member of the club, rumored to be in for Cahill. That would be Awada FC. We'll see what happens afterwards. The state-owned UAE newspaper, The National, is reporting this. They're doing the unnamed sources thing. It looks fairly likely, and as we know, Jesse Marsh and Ali Curtis haven't been definitive about Tim Cahill's future. But I agree with Dave here. Look, it's a lot of money to invest in a guy that there's a good chance won't be a big contributor for you. If you're a Red Bulls fan, your follow-up question to that is immediately, okay, we free up salary. How do we use it? Do we use it? And that's a big question mark for them right now. We'll have to follow them and see what happens. As I mentioned, Justin Meerum's the Asian Cup adventure is not over yet. They will play in that third-place game against either the UAE or Australia. They lost 2-0 to South Korea early on this Monday morning. You can check out an awesome story about Meerum on MLSsoccer.com. They were pretty much the Beatles. The Iraqi Beatles in Australia, according to him, he said, just mobbed. Everywhere they went, mobbed. Couldn't leave their hotel rooms. Screaming people driving hours. We're hoping to have him on Thursday, so you can look forward to some storytelling from the Asian Cup. Let's see. What else is going on here in MLS, guys? There's some news from New York City FC. They signed a attacking midfielder from Atlanta. Yet to see how that one will play out. Looks to be a reserve player. But they also signed Adam Nemec, a Slovakian international, or at least the rumors say they have, from Union Berlin. Berlin is saying that it's done. New York City FC have not said that it's done. Do they need to do more? Do we feel like their roster's where it needs to be?
I'll tell you this. Listed on their roster, their defenders are Jeb Borowski, Jason Hernandez, George John, Chris Wingert, and Kwame Watson-Sarabo. So I think they have a little bit more work to do, but I don't think it's for forwards.
Yep.
Which is why it makes the signing a little bit odd to me.
Yeah, here's the strange thing is that the window, the European – well, I guess the incoming window, that's still open, though, probably for a few months. Not probably. We'll look it up during the show here. But the European window, where players maybe get released from their contracts and stuff, that's about to close. And if you're looking to make a major transfer, mm-hmm. and they're – aside from this Nemec fella, we don't know any other. There aren't any other names.
Right, and you already had obviously David Villa. You had Paddy Mullins up there up top, and now Nemec
drafted Shelton.
Yeah, you have a lot of different pieces. We're still waiting to see what kind of formation they'll play, and that could dictate a lot here as to what they do. A lot of guesswork as to that diamond formation, but Jason Christ has said he's not married to it. He'll do whatever he has to with the guys there. Let's see.
Well, you look at that back line. I think they're okay at fullback. I think they're solid at fullback.
Center back is a big question mark.
George John is an all-MLS player when he's healthy. He hasn't been healthy in 3 years.
And even when he was healthy, it was never really for extended stretches longer than they need him to be, probably.
So, like, we thought it was a great gamble that they took in picking him, but if they're going to rely on him, then they're in trouble.
Yeah, maybe some issues there. Speaking of center backs, Lawrence Simon is official with the Montreal Impact. He's not a designated player. Allocation money buying down that deal gives the Impact some flexibility, and he scored a golazo in his finale against Anderlecht for Standard Liège. That is a huge rivalry, of course, in Belgium. They put up the huge TIFO beforehand, which I'm sure Simon Borg had licking his chops, of Dufour, a former midfielder for Standard Liège, who was signed with Anderlecht. That's pretty much that's sacrilege, essentially. And it was, let's see, it was Jason with a machete holding his decapitated head, right? I mean, and the message was, when you leave Standard Liège, you're dead. Like, and it will go to Anderlecht, of course. Is being
well, there's the sign says red or dead.
Yeah, red or dead.
And the thing is, the red part happened because he got a red card. He took the ball, fired it into the crowd, and got a red card for it. And so that's questionable to me. That was questionable. Where he shot the ball, he just shot it into the crowd.
So you're saying, like, it's questionable that he should have gotten a red?
How do you get a red card for that? Like, he wasn't targeting someone. Yeah. If you were targeting someone, then
all I know is, for fans, that's an MVP moment right there. You got a player a red card. You show up to the game, and you were able to affect the game that much. That's an MVP
moment. Yeah, they'll be talking about that one for a long time. Speaking of European center backs coming to MLS, specifically Canada, Damien Pecqui, he is on his way to Toronto. Poland international, got it done. That's a big signing for them. He just terminated his contract with Real Betis. We'll see how well he does. And then the big one from this morning, Sean Maloney, headed to the Chicago Fire. Real quick before we have him on, guys, let's talk about where he fits in. He says he'll probably play centrally, and we'll get some more detail from him, hopefully, in just a second. That means what for that lineup? It's got some question marks around it. This is all draw, team draw from last season, and they're trying to get over the hump.
Well, Frank Gallup said they wanted speed, and now they have so much speed in this team. Every time I've seen him play, he's played as a winger. So the central thing, it's going to be new for us to see him do. But he's a setup player. He's a guy who likes to set his teammates up, and it looks like he's going to have a few weapons around him that he can help play.
Yeah, not a big goal scorer. Has never really been a big goal scorer. And actually, the last 2 years at Wigan has not been a regular starter, I think is the right way to put it. He did have a hip injury that held him back for a while, but this year getting more time than last year, just 11 starts in 2013-14. He's got 10 this season and 2 goals. But like you said, he'll be there in the middle. And I think we're thinking of 4-5-1 probably.
Yeah.
Duprado, the Brazilian that they picked up from Southampton up top, maybe Ameriquois. You move those parts around a little bit. Igbo Anike maybe on the right, Akam on the left. Those guys can swap. And then
the thing is, though, Frank Gallup has always operated with a 4-4-2 in MLS. The pieces he has would seem to lend themselves to a 4-5-1, where you have the one target guy and then you have all the speed around the target guy. But it remains to be seen whether he goes with a 2-forward setup. Is Maloney essentially your second forward?
Right.
Similar kind of what Mike McGee is, in that you're the second forward coming off creating. The one thing is, this is Gallup's guys. He's the one who went out and signed them, so he clearly has a plan for them.
It screams transition team to
me. Yeah, it does.
So if you're a transition team, I think you want to make sure you're secure with 2 holding mids and then let the other guys run.
So the holding mids are a question. Who are those guys? I mean, it's Kocsis.
You have plenty of choices. Yeah, Radovan Kocsis is one, and then I think Matt Watson. I think Gallup is a fan of Matt Watson, but if not, you have Michael Stevens.
You have Ritter.
Yep, Chris Ritter.
Polster really picked up in the draft. That was a guy that a lot of teams liked at number 7. So Chicago looking to get in the playoffs. Sean Maloney looking to take them there. We're glad to have him on the show on this Monday. Sean, how's it going?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no doubt. I think a lot of people are interested to see what you're up to. And like I said, you've had a busy day. You had the press conference this morning. You've done all the traveling to get here. You had your first training session. Now you're here with us. The DP thing in MLS, it puts you in a different echelon from a promotional standpoint. Are you ready to be the man? Does it feel like a big deal to you?
It does, yeah. I think I understand the responsibility of being a DP. Obviously, speaking with yourselves today, and the press conference this morning. So there's that side of it that I understand the things that the club expect from me. But there's also obviously things on the field and in the dressing room. And it's absolutely fine. This is you have to embrace it. Really, it's quite a privilege that the manager and the owner have pushed it out to try and bring me here.
So take me back to the first time Frank talks to you. You've had a lot of interest. There was a lot of things in the news. Leicester was something that looked like it was pretty close to happening, and then it didn't, and now you're in Chicago. So take me to the beginning when Frank Gallup or whoever gives you a call.
Well, I think in the start of January, when the player is coming towards the end of the contract, there's you get slight interest, or you find out of slight interest maybe before January. But it's obviously the rules dictate that you you can then speak to interested clubs at the start of January. So it was really then that I spoke to the manager here, Frank. And it's not as though the league is an unknown. It's got quite a high profile in the UK. And it was just something that felt right. I think my relationship with Frank that's built over obviously just this month, but it just felt right. I know the city is a huge sport city, so it's something that I'm hopeful that I'm going to be a big part of. And I think during the last couple of weeks, it has been a little bit difficult because look, it's a transfer window in the UK and things can get a little bit crazy. But it's but thankfully the owner here really did push to get me here for the start of the season. And like you said, it's been a bit of a whirlwind the last couple of days.
And what happened with Leicester City that it seemed like they had agreed a transfer fee, but then you weren't able to work out terms? What happened, and then maybe what is different about Chicago?
Yeah, it was reported slightly different to exactly what happened. I think generally what happens is when the fee's agreed between clubs, in England there's I think generally because they're negotiating with the fee, then the player and his agent are speaking with the club. Now that didn't happen. Leicester were very straight up. They didn't speak to myself or a representative before the fee was agreed. And then once that fee was agreed, I think just the media expected a medical the next day. Terms had already been agreed and the transfer would happen. And it wasn't really like that. It was more the fee was trying to be agreed for about 3 weeks with my own club, Wigan. And it just didn't materialise. And during that time, I started to get more of a relationship with Chicago, who I was allowed to speak to due to being out of contract and allowed to speak to foreign clubs. And it just it never really got to the point where, as it was sort of portrayed in the media, that things broke down. It was just more, it really just came down to the, when I sat down and really thought about the move to Chicago, it was just something I wanted. And the owner and the manager had sort of instilled that sort of that feeling over the past few weeks, and it just felt right.
So Frank comes and picks you up from the airport. He's done that with the other two designated players that they've signed this season. Obviously, he's invested in these things. What was his pitch to you? What did they sell you on for Chicago? Having been to Chicago, the city itself, not a tough sell, but I have to imagine to uproot your family or yourself, all these different things, it takes something.
Yeah, no, it's a little bit easier for me because I don't have children or a wife, so that makes it slightly easier. But I don't really see this as a, I don't see that move as a negative or something that's difficult. I'd see it as the opposite. It's a brilliant opportunity to come and live in this city, and like you say, I'd said earlier, it's a big city for its sport. So I know even that even though we had a tough season last year, the attendances were still good. So it's it wasn't really like a massive sell. I think as the first couple of weeks into January just sort of passed, it just felt right to me. I wanted to be a part of the team trying to obviously be a success. And I think it was a real big, it was just very motivating to come to a new city, come to a new country and try and be a part of that.
Now, a lot of the fans in MLS watch European soccer, but here and there. So talk to them a little bit about what type of player you are, how you think you're going to fit in, the characteristics you bring, the style that you play with.
It's always quite difficult when someone asks you this. I think in the position I play, which is the manager is brought me in to be the creative, to be a creative force within the side, which is obviously my position, playing behind a front three or a bit more centrally. But I think generally to my team fans, it's the basic, like I'm going to give 100%. I think as a team, we need to be a really, really tough team to beat. And we all have to give 100%. And I think obviously the first day was the day pre-season. And I think there was a big onus on that coming throughout the season. and I'm no different. I know I play a creative role, but I'm going to have defensive responsibilities as well, and I won't shirk that.
And you mentioned the creative role. Goal scoring, though, not necessarily your forte, but it is the creative side. When you see guys like Igbo Anike, David Akam, I'm sure that Frank Yallop sold you on some of these. You have some runners in front of you. Have you watched much MLS? Have you seen the league? What do you think as far as the style goes and how you fit into that style? Not necessarily the way you play, but maybe how you'll fit into the way it's played here in MLS.
Yeah, I've watched some MLS. I think particularly towards the end of the season, last season, I watched the final. Look, it's a good league. It's I'm going to have to be physically at my best, yeah, it's going to be a test, but it's something that, like I said earlier, I'm very motivated, and it's it's right back at when we started this conversation, and you spoke about the responsibility of a DP. That's something that motivates me, and it's something I'm going to have to do. I'm going to have to adjust to the league, and I have to make an impact. My manager has obviously brought me here to be a creative player. Scoring goals is, I think everyone loves scoring goals, but it's not the be-all and end-all for me. I get exactly the same amount of pleasure seeing a teammate score. It really is a big season for us, and it's obviously we drew a lot last year, and it's part of myself and the other two DPs, particularly in the attacking area, that are obviously going to try and change those draws into wins.
You have a great experience with the Scottish national team, over 35 caps. They're in the process of trying to qualify for Euros, having a pretty successful campaign. How do you feel that this move is going to affect your international career? Have you talked at all to anyone in the Scottish setup about how they feel about MLS, about scouting you in MLS?
Yeah, I've spoke to that was a big sort of part. It was I spoke to the national manager, Gordon Strachan, and also his assistant. I spoke to them on numerous times, and they're absolutely delighted for me with the move. They see it as a brilliant challenge. So that was a big weight off my mind, because the national team is doing really well at the moment. It's been a long time since we've qualified for a major tournament, and we've started the group really well. So it's to get the national manager approval, or at least basically his approval. That was a big weight off my mind, and he's absolutely fine. I think he's looking forward to coming out and watching some games.
Now, obviously, you're not the first Scotsman in MLS. We've got a lot of guys here. Kenny Miller was probably one that a lot of people out there, the common fan, would think about. Did you talk to any of those guys? I think Barry Robson came through, a good number of others, some coaches as well, and Stevie Nichol. Did you do any kind of reconnaissance in that sense where you said, hey, you know, Kenny, what did you experience when you were in Vancouver? How does that maybe apply to what I'll experience?
I spoke to him previously when he was actually at Vancouver, but I purposely didn't phone anyone. I wanted to get the full experience myself. I wanted to make the decision based on how I felt with the manager here and the owner. I didn't want to have any preconceptions, and I'm glad I didn't. It was the same as the city. I've had a few friends that have spent short periods here on holiday. And months on end, and I spoke to them about the city, but I didn't want to have anyone really try and sway me one way or the other. It was definitely an individual decision, and one that I had to come to. And I think it just felt right. Every time there was another club mentioned in England, it just it always came back to Chicago, and that's why I'm here.
So now you're there, and normally teams do the thing where you get a couple months in a hotel, you're trying to settle in. Have you thought at all about where you might live? I mean, single guy coming into Chicago, it seems like a pretty good scenario for you, right?
Yeah, no, it makes it easier, that's for sure. In terms of where I'm going to stay, I'm definitely going to stay in the city. It's I want to feel as though I'm a part of the city, and but at the same time, I'm here to really enjoy the city, but at the same time, I understand why I'm here. I'm going to work very hard. I'm not. There'll certainly be times that to socialise, but the main job I'm here for is to play football. It's not. I'm not coming for any other reason. I'm not here just to enjoy the city. I'm here to do a job.
Well, there you have it. Sean Maloney here to do a job for the Chicago Fire. First training session here on this Monday. He'll get right into it. And then, of course, you can catch them in the season opener, March 7th in L.A. against the Galaxy. A massive match. I have to imagine you're looking forward to that one. Robbie Keane, the former champions. I mean, that's a good way to start your career in MLS, right?
Yeah, no, it's a huge game. Yeah, I was a teammate of Robbie at Celtic, so it'll, it's a massive game. Playing the champions, I'm not sure you could get much bigger.
There you go, trying to prove themselves right off the bat. The Chicago Fire and Sean Maloney. Sean, thanks for joining us here on this Monday. Have fun in preseason, man, and good luck.
All right, yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks there for Sean joining us on this Monday. A couple of little quick notes for you. John Bush looks to be returning for the Fire as well. Sean Johnson, the presumed starter there, but some veteran leadership.
Also
going to
be gone.
Yeah, probably going to be gone some this year with the U.S. That's a good thing to take into consideration. Orlando City finishing up some moves that we knew about. Martin Patterson, he is a championship striker. He's going to be on loan for 6 months there, and then perhaps a free agency signing for them in that sense. And also two Colombians that we have known about but haven't been official, Cristian Higuita and Carlos Rivas. Both of those guys are ones that the staff thinks are going to be starters for that team. Higuita, defensive midfield, and Rivas on the left. Perhaps even a Castillo type. The speed is incredible, apparently. So those are all teams in the running for the playoffs. And really quick, Simon, before we get out of here, I had a little bit of an exercise I put to David the other day, and we struggled with it, and that was name the four teams that don't make the playoffs in the East. So quickly, whoa, I'm going to put you on the spot. Who are the four teams?
The four teams that don't make the playoffs.
Not making the playoffs. This is tough. It's not easy. I think Montreal was one, although I like a lot of the moves that they've made. I just think maybe they're lacking that goal scorer with Marco Davao out. They're going to lean on Piatti so much. Maybe the Red Bulls at this point, because you look at their back line and you say, boy, I don't know where they're going to get numbers from there. And
do you know, DC, I can easily see maybe a down season from them.
Yeah, it's just the question is it down season 5 or 6?
Right, because 6 out of 10 going to the playoffs here, who's your last one? Do both expansion teams make the playoffs?
I think one of them does not make it.
So who's it going to be? This is your fourth.
And I'm going to say New York City FC doesn't make it. Right now, if we're making predictions now, I think you have to say NYCFC.
All right.
Falls short.
There you go.
That was the four that I had as well.
Two New York City teams, according to Simon Borg, not making the 2015 playoffs. Pretty early, but let us know what you think. That's a hard one. The East, maybe not getting the pub that the West is, but it is getting deeper, and it's a crapshoot. When we come back, U.S. Men's National Team in the U-20s.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey guys, this is Omar Gonzalez from the LA Galaxy, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys. It's Monday. I'm Andrew Wiebe, David Goss, Simon Borg here. Redemption for the U.S. U-20s. Two games to start off the group in the CONCACAF U-20 Championship. A draw and a loss, and a lot of people were saying this is another catastrophe waiting to happen at the youth levels. Well, they win 3 straight to finish out the group, and then they knock off El Salvador to seal their spot in the World Cup this summer in New Zealand. Jurgen Klinsmann's proclamation that they would make it comes good. And now they're going to the World Cup. And which makes me wonder, did we overreact about the first two games? Is the form and the function of U.S. youth national teams just like a place for all our overreactions and neurotic tendencies as soccer fans in this country to say, oh, we're screwed because the youth team is not doing well? Or, oh, man, we're going to be the next big thing because we've got Michael Bradley, Freddie Adu, and Josie Altidore tearing it up at that level.
No, I think the hysteria comes in that the U.S. should not have problems getting out of CONCACAF, qualifying, period. I mean, if they do poorly on the world stage, that maybe is an overreaction by everyone. But at the minimum, CONCACAF qualifying should not be as challenging as it turns out to be, especially the way CONCACAF qualifying is. It gives you so many opportunities to make it through. And let's be honest, if you fail as they did in those first two games.
A draw against Guatemala, a loss against Panama. Panama qualifying automatically.
It was hard at that point to make it through. And we talked about how Klinsmann's prediction was bold, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And Tab Ramos talked about it after qualifying. He goes, we had four finals. We had to eliminate four teams in four different games. They got shutouts in all of them. So, I mean, credit to them for pulling it off.
But it's not the shutouts, though. That it was the goal scoring that had people worried. It was the lack of kind of a clinical finisher, a clinical piece up top. Even the final ball from a lot of guys. Tommy Thompson's a guy that excites you, but then you're waiting for the actual payoff.
I thought he was phenomenal in the tournament. Two things, though, for me that stick out. One is, we worried, they changed the formation, they played better. They went with a big striker up top, they played a 4-4-2, they played more direct. Because CONCACAF qualifying is a little bit harder because every game is on the road. And in World Cup qualifying for the senior team, you play half your games at home on our surfaces in front of our crowds. And then you go on the road, and even the senior team struggles on the road. Now, this youth team, they have to play either the full tournament in Guatemala or Jamaica. The facilities
David,
were...
U23 qualifying, Olympic qualifying.
Yes, was at home, and they
was in the
okay,
U.S.
That's,
okay, come on.
Okay, that's a different thing. But we were saying, is this a continual issue? They should qualify. They went down there and they wanted to play beautiful soccer on a terrible field, and they struggled to adjust for a little while. And even at the end of the tournament, Roman Gall and Tommy Thompson were still trying to play, which I think is a positive in one way because we want players like that, and a negative because they have to understand the situation.
Okay, so they're in the World Cup, but the real question is long-term, which guys have a chance to play on the senior team? Which guys could be future U.S. men's national teamers? Who should Jurgen Klinsmann be looking at? And who did we see here? Who are the guys?
I think in the center midfield, I thought that Heinemann was very
Heinemann's
good,
excellent.
And everyone expects
Heinemann's
him.
Just excellent.
I thought Canoes was a big difference maker when he came in, and I'm a big fan of Roman Gall. I thought he played well, but struggled with the surface, but yet still scored big goals, especially from the spot throughout the tournament. So those were the highlights for me, and I think Tommy Thompson's a star. I don't know if he's a U.S. national team player, but I think he's going to be a good MLS player.
I think the one obvious one is Zach Steffen. I mean, that's the one that you look at and say, this guy in the future could be the U.S. national team goalkeeper.
Yeah, but we're talking way
down
the
line. Oh, sure, that's any of these guys, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Heinemann's
Cameron
closer.
Carter-Vickers,
that's the other guy. That's the other. He's 17 years old. He's a more of a man than I am. I mean, his shoulders are like a foot wider than mine.
But he's one of those guys I think will enter the national team program, I think, a little precociously, where people say, really, we're bringing in that guy in?
Yeah, is it
a
really
little about a Yedlin situation.
And I thought Miazga played well in the tournament. I thought the back line played well in general, but I thought he played very well.
Well, there you have it. Let us know what you think. On the Olympic side, we mentioned that Andy Herzog will be the coach for the Olympic qualifying team as they attempt to get to that tournament. So he's been kind of campaigning for that for a while, and finally it's official. I don't think there didn't really seem like there was ever going to be an alternative to that. Meanwhile, Herzog and the national team are in Chile now. That game is on Wednesday. It's the first friendly of the year. Fox Sports 1 is where you can watch it. It's at 5 p.m. Eastern. MLS heavy roster for this one, no doubt about that. DeAndre Yedlin actually called in from Tottenham for this match. It was a little bit strange, I thought, after he just got there. You'd think that they'd want to give him a little bit more time to settle in. Maybe there's some writing on the wall there from Tottenham. Maybe the fact is they've determined he's just not close at this point to being there. Of course, he had an off season, so this is a little bit of a preseason for him. There's been talk of a 3-man back line for the U.S. So before we get to what the roster is, what the lineup is, what has to be accomplished from this game, Simon? What does Jurgen Klinsmann go in and put on the whiteboard and say, this is what we're getting done?
You know, it comes down to the confusion here on whether you're doing this for the Olympic team or for the senior team. So once you've resolved that, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the plan is for that. If it's for the Olympics, then yes, you got to get Olympic caliber players involved. But setting
that's what the training was for, I think, if you're being really.
You think it's the camp?
Yeah, I think it was more the camp. Okay. I think it was just kind of an introduction to how things would work on that team and should they ever make the jump. But in this game.
Then your next question is, are they really introducing a new formation here? A 3-man back line. You look at the defenders available here, and you think they're probably going to go to a wing back and three center backs based on who's called up here.
I think in classic Jurgen Klinsmann fashion, he goes 4-4-2 with Nick Raimondo at right back and John Kempen at left back. Keep people uncomfortable. Keep them on their heels.
Got to throw them off. Got to see what happens.
But so if you look at it, are we going to introduce now a new formation yet again? Like, so that to me is a little unsettling, although I believe that I've seen the 5-3-2 work so well for Mexico. I think it's a fantastic form. I personally love it, and I think it can work well. So you have Shea and Yedlin as the wingbacks. Take your pick on whoever you want in the center back. I think Jermaine Jones getting more reps at center back, if that's essentially where he's heading.
Some of the – excuse me.
So if Jermaine Jones' head is the plan is to play him at center back, he's got to be in that. In
he also
three.
Fits the three center back.
Yeah, that's what I was
going to
say. It almost feels like that's why you play the three-man center back.
For him? Yeah.
I mean, who else in the U.S. system can play in that spot right now? Among our normal back line guys, unless Jurgen Klinsmann decides that he fell in love with Michael Parkhurst again. Who else
no, you're right.
fits in that middle spot?
You're right.
I'm not
you're
sure
right.
that there is anybody.
He can marshal everyone back there. And then I think you have Altidore and Dempsey up top.
Yeah.
So Jermaine Jones and playing at center back.
I think Matt Beisler on the left side of that three.
Yep.
And then probably Birnbaum or Hedges. And I actually think those guys fit in that three-man area, especially Beisler. With the way he reads the game, yeah. He's played that left-back position before.
And look, Beisler is not exactly the fleetest of foot, so it helps to have maybe in that three center back setup, having the support. The other big one for me here is the Michael Bradley position.
Yeah.
We talked about it all offseason about where Vanny thinks he should play at TFC, where Michael thinks he should play, where all these guys, and there's a big debate. So who operates in the central defensive position?
Yep.
I think it's going to be Will Trapp.
That's what I have on my lineup sheet right now.
But if it's Michael Bradley, I'm assuming he wants to be in that position based on what we've heard out of
him. I think it'll be Will Trapp, but I think you have Mix and you have Michael
Bradley,
and they kind of just they roam a little bit. And I actually would be fine with Michael playing in kind of the more deep lying of the two. Diskerud, probably a little bit better close to goal, I think.
So you're saying
with
Trapp
his distribution.
Trapp and Bradley side by side?
Yeah, but in Bradley with some free reign, with kind of the Jermaine Jones mindset, so to speak. But obviously, Michael's going to have more discipline.
I would love to see it be Bradley and Mix holding and Lee Wynn in front of them. I don't know if he gives him the keys to the car in this game, but I would like to see that because the point of this camp for me is you bring these guys in, you see them in practice, you identify a few of them that you say these are guys that have a future, put them in a safe situation. Don't put Birnbaum out there at left back. Put him at center back next to Beisler. Give him a shot if you think he's legitimate and see what he can give you in a situation where he's around guys who are senior national team players.
Put him in a place to succeed, so to speak.
Another player I think that it might be worth giving him time is Bobby Wood, given his situation with 1860 Munich and where, given maybe a platform, a stage here to show himself. And then who starts in goal? Who do you guys have? It's Sean Johnson, John Kempen, and Nick Raimondo.
I think Raimondo starts the game
and maybe
Johnson in the second half.
Yeah, I could see a 45-45 scenario in a situation like this. I think Kempen's just there for the experience. Kempen's there to soak it all in. He's there to get the reps. And so, things maybe don't take him by surprise in the later times. He doesn't get the stars in his eyes.
But is Kempen going to be your Olympic goalkeeper? Because if so, why not give him some time here?
I think because you brought him into the camp to train and challenge with these guys, not to play.
Yeah, but goalkeeping is a situation. You need games. It's game action.
Yeah, but you're not getting games in this situation with the guys that would be in front of you otherwise.
No, fair enough. But again, it's the element. It's being in the element.
Sure,
on the road against the big opponent.
Do we think Kempen is the starter for the Olympic team as it was? I mean, Cody Cropper has got to be in there, doesn't he? There's some other – Zach Steffen, I think, would even be in there.
Exactly, I think so as well.
Although, and, that's coming down the line in 2016. So by that time, with the U-20 World Cup, maybe Steffen is the one that's getting those reps.
If that's the case, Kempen doesn't start, and I think it's an indicator as to where Kempen might lie in the goalkeeping depth.
Yeah, either way.
I think also we've seen in the past – I said this previously that I think Tim Howard will be the starter at the Olympics if they make it there.
You think so?
Yeah.
What's your logic?
If you look in the past, it's been guys who they've used an overage spot on that position, and I think if Tim Howard doesn't make his way back into the national team this year, that'll be his swan song at the end. To go there like McBride did at the last World Cup, to go there, give the experience to the kids, play the position, and enjoy the tournament back in Brazil, and then be done.
One thing before we get out of here and go to the mailbag, guys. You mentioned it in passing, Simon. Breck Shea is that left wing back spot, and Orlando City are saying that he will play left back for them, at least to start. There's a possibility that he'll move around, but they think that he's going to be better facing the field, having space to run with Carlos Rivas on the left, the overlap, blah, 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 blah. But is he a guy that long-term really can be a national team prospect for the U.S. at left back? Could he be the U.S.'s left back or left wing back or whatever it is?
No, to me it's a big difference. I mean, if you're talking wing backs, then yeah. I mean, he's where he has definitely defensive responsibilities, but he's more important what he does, moving
But actually
moving
the
forward.
Rumblings I was hearing at Superdraft was that his instincts in the attacking half have gotten a little rusty, which is no surprise. He hasn't really played. He hasn't had a notable role with anybody for a while. So maybe that's something he has to get back. Maybe the wing back position isn't necessarily his best bet. He did play some left back, some center back at FC Dallas with the Generation Adidas team in Spain.
You need to see him. Yeah, he would so have early. To become a different player, which sure. is possible, but with the amount of work he puts in to then say, I want you to play wing back or fullback and get up and down that line and cover your responsibility, he needs to become a different personality on the field.
Yeah. The engine's there. It's a question of tactically, mentally, is he prepared for right. that? And is that something – can he recognize the situations quick enough when he's not familiar with that
and
stuff?
And it's like we saw it with Beasley. We knew how hard he works. We know he gets stuck in when he's one-on-one with a guy. We knew that if he could get a little bit comfortable, he could fit into that position. But with Breck Shea, it's totally different, I think.
Yeah, I think this is the historical thing with Breck Shea. You look at him, you see that big frame, you see the speed, you see everything, all the tools – now we have to see how it'll work out on the field. Let us know what you think. You know how to get at us. When we come back, the mailbag, there's a new hot boy, and he's emailing us from Minnesota.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, I'm Brad Davis of the Houston Dynamo, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, Simon Borg, David Goss. The snow is increasing now. We can see the size of the flakes. Perhaps an early exit in the carts for us, Simon, and you can head home and dig into your provisions and your strawberry jam. Into the mailbag here before we get to your okay, you got something here, Dave?
Well, what's I just up? Wanted to say, Simon,
what?
This weekend,
what happened?
Did you attend any major events?
Yes, I saw this as well. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Did I attend? I was working all day, literally all day Saturday.
Perhaps there was an idol that you were able to pay homage to.
An idol.
So you're saying you miss Mike Francesicon.
I did.
You did miss Francesicon.
I heard it was happening.
I heard it was happening. Thousands of fans were there. If anyone doesn't know, Mike Francesa, the legendary quote-unquote, some people would say Simon would be one of them, New York sports personalities who's now, I think he's got a nationally syndicated show. On Fox was there was an event in his honor, and there was a fan who dressed up as a can of Diet Coke because he's famous for constantly drinking Diet Coke. Wore a pontiff hat because everyone calls him the Pope.
Yeah.
Made of Diet Coke boxes and carried a staff made of empty Diet Coke bottles, and they called him Diet Pope. So, Simon, now you have something to shoot for next year. You have to outdo Max Lucci of Staten Island.
Yeah, you have to be better than Diet Pope.
Diet Pope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's a good line.
You gotta be
I'm just wondering right now who's the soccer personality right now that would get a what do they call them cons?
Yeah,
a con.
Wouldn't it be?
There was an element of roast to it as well. So I actually think that you'd have a good shot at this.
I'm far from that.
You know
Are we talking about American soccer or world soccer?
Here's an idea for you, just to get you on a completely different tangent. We should have a mailbag section that's just one time. That's just a roast of Simon Borg.
I think we've kind of done that. Isn't this whole
show a roast?
That's true. But maybe we just like the last thing we get from people is just a little roast segment or like an imitation of you. We'll see. It's something to think about.
I would love to get audio imitations of Simon.
It could be really good. Joseph Wilson in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Guys, now that March to the Match is done, can you use their opening? It's so much better than the extra time opening.
Agreed.
Shots fired on you, David Goss.
Oh, okay. I didn't invent the style of our opening. I'm just the one who
makes
each one.
What is the March of the Match intro?
That's a good question. You should probably go listen to it. Nick Fershaw did it. It's very good. It's got different pop culture references to soccer and a nice beat behind it. You know,
you've just been called out. Stand up for yourself.
Yeah, you have been. You have been.
Come on. I want to see a little personality.
I want a new intro next week, David. I'm putting you on the clock.
I might be
here.
Snowed in from intro.
I know. That's what I'm saying. You got plenty of time
He's
to do it.
He's already backing out.
Uh-huh. The real hot boy, Hakeem, in Minnesota. Guys, I'm a longtime fan, but this is the first time I'm writing in. David mentioned he wanted to hear.
Which, by the way, is exciting. Long time, first time.
I knew that you would jump
that
right on
gets
that.
Me excited.
Yeah, yeah. Dave mentioned that he wanted to hear a little bit about what MLS fans in Minnesota thought about the dual expansion bids. Of course, Minnesota United and the Vikings are the two. A lot of people I've talked to about it are hesitant in advocating for the Wilfs due to their fear of them undermining an MLS franchise. But I'm actually in support of the Wilfs' ownership over Minnesota United because they grew up passionate about the game in Poland, and they say they will put their two franchises on equal footing should they be awarded the team. With the brand new football stadium with soccer in mind coming to downtown Mini next year, there is potential to attract many more new fans. They have all the resources to make it a high-profile club, and United just does not. I actually don't agree with that statement at all. United has plenty of financial backing behind them. I don't think money is the question mark with either of these two bids. But he finishes with, beyond that, the fact is that there's a bidding battle between the two groups is awesome, and it shows how much desire there is to get a franchise in this area. And I will be buying my season tickets excitedly no matter who gets that bid. It kind of feels like it's assumed that Minneapolis is going to be in, doesn't it? I mean, that's kind of what the feeling is.
What's interesting to me is, does it get to a point where the two groups get together and say, let's work together. Let's make this. Let's blow every MLS team out of the water. And let's just join forces and just be.
It kind of feels like that's definitely not going to happen.
Yeah. But why? Why do you say definitely? But why?
Because I think a lot of it is kind of the venue side of things. Yeah. Like Minnesota United has built this brand and they've built this identity and they've built this vision. Why would they give it away to somebody else? And they want that soccer-specific stadium, whereas the Wilfs are very much married into the stadium that we're building for the Vikings will be dual-purpose.
Which is why when it says resources here and you mentioned money, they also already have the ability to build the stadium, which is something that the Minnesota United doesn't have. So sure, under they, resources, that's something
that
you
know. How do you know that?
Minnesota, because they're already building the football stadium.
Right. Well, they would have,
but how do you know they don't have the resources?
No. It's not about the money. It's about maybe the public support in the land.
You have to have land to build a stadium.
Okay, but we don't know that they don't have that stadium plan. We don't know. I mean, Minnesota United, we don't know that much about the bid as it stands.
It's been pretty secretive so far. Both have presented, I believe, to the folks over here next door to us at 420. It's a waiting game at this point, but both those bids seem very, very strong. Robert emailing in, he has a question he'd like to hear our opinion on. We debated a while back when the fixtures came out, the schedule, about who had the hardest and easiest time. San Jose, I believe, had the hardest schedule based on last year's. He says for the last 10 years, the Galaxy have had the easiest schedule in MLS because they had those two and sometimes three extra home games against Chivas.
Yeah.
They were called away matches, but they were at home. I mean, who are we kidding here? How do you think they'll do this season with that advantage? Is that a loss for the LA Galaxy? Because they did dominate that rivalry, especially in recent times. And it was another home game. There was just less travel that they had to do as compared to everybody else in MLS.
I mean, but was it that significant? I mean, we're talking about two games. I think when you look at the travel and the schedule strength, you got to look over the course of the entire season. Mm-hmm. Don't just pick two games and say, oh, now, you know, those two games are gone. What happens? No. I think LA, I mean, San Jose, I believe, had, I don't know the rationale behind it, but I guess San Jose had the toughest schedule.
Because of strength.
Yeah. Because they finished low in the standings last year.
So everybody they play is going to be better than them.
Right. So I think that's part of how they come up with that number. But LA, given that their location and the fact
it would be a minor advantage. But I think there would be an advantage there nonetheless. They don't have it anymore. That's all that matters. Everybody on that even playing field. Although those teams in LA eventually and New York now will have a little bit less travel to do throughout the course of the season. That's got to be nice for them. Finish it off here. Craig Walker, we get these kind of questions quite a bit, actually. He says he first became a fan of MLS when he moved to D.C. during high school. Thereby, he was a big D.C. United fan. He's now in Clemson, South Carolina for college. And he got sucked into he went there in 2005. Looks like he's stayed. He was sucked into the football frenzy that is college football in the South. I didn't know the ACC was that big, though, in that sense. I thought
Clemson
that was just
is
a big.
Clemson is big.
Really?
Yeah, Clemson is a big school.
Okay, all right.
And they have the rivalry with South Carolina as
That's true. After graduating, he moved up the road to Greenville, South Carolina, and just last season got back into watching MLS and DC United. Welcome back, Craig. He loves listening to the podcast and has helped him stay in touch with in town without any soccer coverage or any major soccer. But now Atlanta's getting a team, and he's got a question to ask himself. Does he jump or does he stay local? Now it used to be local, I guess. DC was the local team. Now Atlanta would be. What do we do? What would we advise him to do?
I think it's an opportunity if he jumps before it starts, before its arrival to DC, that you can start with a new team and enjoy it and still, I think, in the back of your mind also want DC to do well when it's not against your team.
I think it's more palatable and more acceptable because Atlanta are an expansion franchise. If they'd been in existence throughout that time that DC was in existence and they were playing each other and there was even some semblance of a rivalry or bad blood or even just competition, then I think it's less, you know, it's a little bit sketchy at that point.
But did you guys not pay attention to his note? He wrote, "I was a big DC United fan. If you were that far deep in your fandom where you label yourself as big, the fact that you're entertaining this idea is wrong. And you guys are trying to justify bad behavior. I say don't even entertain the thought."
Okay.
I think rid the thought. Actually, banish the thought from your mind.
I think that's delivered with typical bombacity, but I think also a legitimate. If you were a fan of DC, why give it up now? You can watch them both. It's up to you. Maybe you didn't have a connection over these last few years. It depends on how you feel about it, Craig. Let us know what you decide. We'll share it with the folks out here. But it sounds like we feel as though you can go either way. Hey, that's all it is on this Monday. We got to get out of here. We got to hit the subways before they shut down. Big thanks to Sean Maloney of the Chicago Fire for joining us on this Monday, and big thanks to you guys, Simon Borg, David Goss. Stay safe, stay warm. I am Andrew Wiebe. Enjoy your week. We'll be right back around on Thursday.